The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
Good news, bad news. All those spam and text calls you've been getting lately? Well, that's a result of your information having been sold by third-party data brokerages, or it's been stolen and sold to nefarious people. Ticketmaster recently had a data breach where 560 million users' information was stolen and sold on the dark web. This included their names, physical addresses, email addresses, credit card information, and much more. Best case scenario, this just ends with more annoying phone calls and text messages. Worst case, it's going to end in fraud and you're really going to be in the hurt locker. That's why I've been using a service called Aurora for over a year now. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but not only do they monitor the dark web and the internet for my information in case it is involved in a breach, they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. When I signed up, they identified over 60 that had my information and went right to work removing me from these data brokerages. Now, yep, you could do this yourself, but each one of these data brokerages has its own policies and procedures, and I have no idea how you would even start trying to remove yourself from these services, let alone how much time that would take. But Aurora does that, as well as they offer a whole suite of tools to keep you safe, including a VPN, antivirus, password management, parental controls, and identity theft insurance. You get this all in one app, one place, so it's super simple. And you can do this with a 14-day risk-free trial. Super simple. And if you don't like it, you just cancel anytime. It's not complicated. At a minimum, you can take a look and see what information of yours is out there lurking on the web right now. Use the link down below in the description or go to aurora.com/afterburn and you get 14 days risk-free, cancel anytime, super easy, and take the first step in protecting yourself out there on the interwebs. That's the good news, by the way.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You need reliable appliances to help you conquer the day. And Menards is the one-stop shop for huge savings on new energy-efficient appliances. We carry the largest in-stock selection, starting at low prices and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade today and save big money on new appliances right now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Want to make a podcast? Let me tell you about Spotify's program for podcasters, and it's called Spotify for Podcasters. I've been using it for over a year now. Couldn't be happier from the switch. You can record wherever you create podcasts, whether it be your phone, computer, and it's easy to upload it and distribute it to everywhere podcasts are heard. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. Best of all, Spotify for Podcasters is completely free. So launch your podcast today. Get started with Spotify for Podcasters. Go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started.
I remember landing back in Qatar and my phone just like blew up when I turned it back on. And my mom and my friends were like, hey, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And because all they knew was like there had been service members that had died at HKIA. And no matter if it was Air Force, Marine, Army, et cetera, we're all a team. And so no matter who it is, like you don't want it to have any U.S. service member name on there. And when the names came out that it was her and a couple others, like we were all like, we're gonna keep going, because I think that was like the intent of the individuals that did all this, was like, we want to keep them from coming back and taking these people out, or whatever the intent was like, you think we're not gonna come back? Okay, joke's on you, because we don't get scared that easily.
Tower 26 is released to you, runway 4 left, 0 0 at 5, quick takeoff.
Seat tied, Altair 0 eyes, we're clear for takeoff, clear for the airspace.
Fire projector.
My burn ramp curve was at 354.
What's up, and thanks for listening in or watching if you're on YouTube or Spotify, because they have videos now. But My guest today is Grace Tinkey. She has quite the interesting career. She started off at the Air Force Academy for a short bit. She ended up as a C-17 loadmaster. We talk a lot today about her time in Afghanistan during the evacuation of 2021, what she experienced, what she thought, and just some of the things that she went through. She now is waiting to go to pilot training. She commissioned, so she's gone from the enlisted side of the house, the officer side of the house. We talk about that as well, and just a little bit more about her background, which I think you'll enjoy. You can join me, AP, and Voodoo on August 31st over on the Afrin Podcast YouTube channel at 1800 or 6 p.m. Eastern for a live Q&A and discussion. If you have any questions, feel free to shoot those my way. You can go over to the contact section of the Afrin Podcast website. I have links down to that below, as well as a newsletter. A reminder, if you've signed up for the newsletter, because that's something new we're doing, that make sure you verify that you actually signed up. So you'll get an email once you sign up saying, yep, it's me, and I opted in to this newsletter. So there are a few of you out there who haven't done that, so make sure you do that if you sign up for the newsletter. And if you haven't yet, you can find that down in the description below and share it with your friends. With that being said, let's get into the podcast with Grace. Grace, thanks for joining me on the podcast. I'm glad we were able to connect and happy to have you on here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's good to meet a fellow Georgian.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of funny. Growing up basically right next door to each other, more or less, and then while this is a remote recording, we're probably separated by maybe an hour
maybe an hour now,
but yeah. You got big things going on. I mean, you're heading off to Europe tomorrow, so I do appreciate you taking the time to join me. And then
absolutely.
I know you're going to be doing a lot of work the next week.
Should be fine.
Yeah, it'll be good. So, hey, I want to jump kind of right into it. This ties into the theme of in the month of what I've been releasing on the podcast, and it's talking a lot about Afghanistan because we're now coming up on the 2-year anniversary. You are now getting ready to go to pilot training, which is kind of cool. We'll talk about that in a minute. But 2 years ago, you were not in pilot training or getting ready to go to pilot training. You were a loadmaster, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Can you kind of talk to me about just big picture? Where were you? Where were you assigned? What were you doing leading up to the August 2021 drawdown in Afghanistan? Where were you?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2020, I was a senior airman out of Joint Base Charleston. I was in the 15th Airlift Squadron, the best one, the Eagles. we have a competition with the Pelicans and Lions all the time. But essentially what we were doing was we were prepping for my first deployment and a couple of the other airmen in our squadron first deployment. So and very beginning of August, on August 1st, we deployed from Charleston to Qatar in IED. I remember getting there, you have your typical like pre-deployment nerves just because none of us had ever been deployed. Although Qatar is not as bad as most bases could be. It was our first time away from home other than just TDYs we had done for being loadmasters. But we got there. I remember we had our all call essentially. We're like, hey, this is what's going to be expected the next couple months of you being here. There's this thing called NEO we might be doing in Afghanistan, but it'll probably be more towards December, so it probably won't be your crew while you're here. And so that was something we had heard, but not something we really expected to do, although you're always expected to be ready for no matter what it is. Literally 2 days, not 2 days later, it was more like 2 weeks later on the 15th, we were supposed to go to Africa for a mission. And I remember stepping to our brief, and we were going to be one of the first jets in Kabul bringing the Mountain Home Division. That was the crew before the 82nd came in. And so we were sitting there, and they're like, you guys ready for this? And it was one of those things where, like, I don't think anyone knew what was going to happen. Even the intel guy was like, low threat right now. Like, we're going to go in, get these guys on the ground, secure the perimeter, and kind of go from there. And we were kind of laughing.
I think a lot of people probably people didn't see that going the way it went, especially there on the 16th. Real quick, in that 2 weeks leading up to it, were you doing like local missions? Were you going Africa, Europe, just kind of bouncing around, or what was that 2 weeks
leading up? Oh, yeah. We were mainly doing like Kuwait and Iraq runs, a couple Africa runs, but typically our like standard mission was like Kuwait, Iraq, et cetera, just kind of doing that standard circle. So we hadn't done anything related to Afghanistan yet, just had heard about it.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Interesting. So the 15th, you're planning on going on a mission to Africa and you walk in and the plans change. Can you kind of talk to me through
that? The plans change. Yeah. So we went into the brief. Obviously nerves got pretty high at that point. 'Cause we're like, okay, like we're actually going to go do this. We had no idea what to expect, which was the hardest thing, I think, because the unknown is something you never know. We stepped out to the jet, and we had our entire cargo floor full of these Army guys and their battle rattle ready to go. And I remember looking, and, I mean, there was no room. They were, like, back to back to back to back, just sitting on the floor. The commander was one of the most, like, high-speed guys I have ever met. He was like, you just get us on the ground. Like, I don't care how you do it. Just get us there. And so, kind of like the other pilots you talked to, essentially we were flying out there. There were a few jets that had gone in front of us that had turned around because the field was hot. And our aircraft commander, Captain Darren Gelson, so much respect for that guy. His first deployment as an AC, we were flying in. He's like, how do you guys feel? Like, do you want to keep going? Do you want to press? And we're like, no, like, we have to get these guys on the ground. So we're going to go until we can't go any further, essentially. And so closer we had heard, okay, like, the field is good. Like, you can land at your own risk. That was kind of the standard phrase I think everyone heard was land at your own risk. As we landed, we had taxied over to three other jets that were on the ground. And it was the most, like, eerie time I have ever had because you're just waiting. You're like, okay, this seems chill. Like, nothing's going on. Like, everything's okay. We got the guys off. Me and my partner, Yoakum, walked across to go see, like, how they were floor loading people on the other jets because it's something, like, we had never done. There's, like, a paragraph in the pubs of, like, how to floor load people. And you're like, okay, you just get cargo straps across the cargo bay and that's it. Definitely not the best way to transport people, but in situations like this, you do everything you can to get as many people on that jet because the mission is essentially get as many people out. So you do whatever you can.
Like, has the chaos happened on the field yet, or is this?
No. So this is right before all that happened. Like, it was very calm when the first jets landed. Like, it was one of those things where nothing was going on. And that was the scary part because you're like, okay, like, something is wrong. If nothing's going on, like, something is wrong. So essentially we went back to the jet and we just waited. And then they started bringing out, like, busloads of people. This was before they started, like, walking people out because they thought this was more effective. So how they would do is they had, like, white wristbands on. And that was showing that they were vetted for us to know that they were safe to be on our plane. And so we started bringing people up. And then in between the two busloads, there were two individuals that had run across the airfield and, like, demanded to get on the jet and, like, ran on in front of us. And that was when, I think, not the beginning of the end, but that's when chaos essentially started. At that point, we had noticed they didn't have white wristbands. And for us, like, we're always willing to help people. But caveat to all of this is you don't know who some of these people are. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of people do not like us. And you have to be very careful of, okay, are these people on our jet for the right reason? And so we had to get them to the edge of our ramp. We had security forces, like, look through their bag, and they had them escorted away. Definitely not how we wanted to start that, but you have to be careful of always protecting your crew and then the people on board that are supposed to be there. So that was the very start. As we finished up loading, we were closing up, and we were strapping down bags, and we started hearing gunfire outside. And I remember Yoakum looking at me, and I'm like, all right, it's time to go. We got on comms with Captain Gelson, we're like, hey, sir, like, we're hearing this in the back. And he was like, yeah, no, I can see it on the runway. And the JTAC on the ground was essentially told us that one of the gates had broken or people were, like, running through. And was like, okay, y'all need to leave right now because we're going to have to, like, essentially do a ramp freeze because, I mean, we don't want you guys taxiing or taking off all these jets. Because this is before, like, anyone knew, like, how to really do any of this. Yeah. So we were lucky enough that we were able to take off with that first set of people. That was also when the other jet with Colonel Cut, they were being overran as well. So that's was not fun for us because you could hear it on comms, like, hey, like, this crew needs help. But there's also, like, you have to get your crew and these people out as well and hope that they can get their crew too. And that's something that no, like, team member ever wants to deal with. It's like, you want to be on the ground, you want to help them, but sometimes, like, there's not much you can do in that situation. And so the moment we heard them on comms taking off as well, like, we could definitely breathe a sigh of relief, like, okay, like, we're all off the ground. But that was the same night that one of another crew had their crew entry door opened on the taxiway and they had to pull a gun on someone. It's just, like, a very chaotic night to where when we all got back to Moose Ops that night, like, it was, everyone was just like, I don't know how this is going to go. But you do the best with what the hand is given to you and you keep going. But we landed back in Qatar that night, and that's where essentially, like, no one knew, like, how that process was going to go. So we literally landed and sat on the ground for an additional like 7-8 hours just waiting for Jess to get processed with people. But definitely not the best start to all this, but I think it made us realize, okay, like we're going to have to rise to the occasion every day because this is not going to be fun, but it's not supposed to be fun. And we know what our mission is and we got to keep doing it. So literally the mission was to go in, get as many people out, get cargo out every day. If you're tired, you know, you sleep the best you can, but like this is a very critical time that you had to do the best you can with the crew you had. So.
Level up your listening with Bose Quiet Comfort Ultra earbuds and headphones with immersive sound and world-class noise cancellation for a not-so-silent night. Visit Bose.com/Spotify to shop sound that's more than a present.
Introducing Royal Caribbean's newest ship, Icon of the Seas, the ultimate family vacation. The ultimate 6 slides, 8 neighborhoods, zero compromise vacation. The ultimate never done that, can't wait to do it vacation. The ultimate chillin' by a different pool every day of the week vacation. This is the icon of vacations. Icon of the Seas, arriving in 2024. Book today. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry Bahamas.
Seeing the chaos, like I cannot imagine it. We've talked about it on a couple different podcasts. We just had a bro chat that released today. You know, it's two other fighter pilots. And the thing that was really impressive is the fact that like everyone, to be expected, rose to the occasion. Yeah. And there is nothing that was written down of like how you handle this, but everyone was a champion and like made it work. Like there's no rules. The rule book like got thrown out the window. But again, there's nothing telling you how to do X, Y, and Z. So again, it's like hats off to all of you guys for making that happen. It's pretty impressive.
Thank you.
It's funny you mentioned Colonel Cut. I wonder, is that K-U-T?
I believe it is.
Is he bald?
Yes, he's bald.
Yeah. That's a throwback. He was one of my T6 pit instructors way back when.
No way.
I gotta go track him down. Super personable guy. Very intense. if he hasn't changed, if I remember correctly.
So much respect for what him and his crew did. They were,
I can't imagine,
over and made a very game time decision, and a lot of respect for what he did because not an easy decision to make for sure. So
yeah, I think AP said it best: is we get paid for our judgment. You know, you're not always going to make the right call, but you got to make a call, and then that's the worst thing is to not make a decision. You just got to make it and hope it's about 80% right or better, and life will be okay. How many people were loaded up on? So the first time that's the first time you floor loaded anyone,
correct?
And you were with Sergeant Yoakum, trying to get him on the podcast as well.
Yeah.
I imagine that's not something that's happening probably very often, as you mentioned, like the first time you've ever done it. I'm trying to think of like it's probably only like Neo type scenarios where that's going to happen. How many people do you know, or do you think you had on your plane like that first round?
Our first time, I believe we had a little under 500. And it was one of those things where you're loading people all the way up to the steps, to the cockpit. And so where I was sitting at the Loadmaster station, you have people right there. And I'll remember like so many moments where I'm sitting there looking back as you always do, just making sure everything's okay on takeoff. And you just see families crying. For me, like I can't imagine leaving a country and knowing that the only thing you have is the backpack you brought with you, and that it is so bad that you're willing to get on a plane that you have no idea where it's going. And I think that was like our main job as a Loadmaster is to try to make this as comfortable as possible for them, although it was almost impossible to do so. Just from the pictures you've seen, like the bathrooms were disgusting, the floors were horrible. But a lot of these people, it's the first time they ever flew on a plane. And so you have to have grace with them. We would try to find the best person that spoke English and put them on comms so they could be able to talk to them and be like, okay, like this is what's going on. This is why we haven't landed. This is why we're still circling. This is why we're not getting off the plane right now. And it might have been hard for a lot of people to understand, but we tried to communicate as best as we could with them just so they knew what was going on. But a situation where like I can't imagine being in that position, but we're extremely lucky to live in a country that we do where we haven't had to worry about that yet. So.
What were the next couple of weeks like? What was a day in the life of after kind of the initial chaos there on the 16th? Did it settle down at all or like stabilize? What was it like?
I think the best way to say it is it didn't get any easier. You just got not better at doing it, but each day was completely different. But we were hard crew with the same group for majority of the time. And I will say that everyone was very thankful, I think, to be with the groups they were assigned, because although we didn't even know each other prior to, you learn how to communicate very, very well. There is never a thing of over-communicating. Like, literally one of us would be on headsets with the pilot the entire time, telling them everything that was going on. We learned, like, how to do better as it went on. A lot of things were, like, chaining down, like, all the emergency exits, which you're not supposed to do, but, like, we were not going to let anyone get on our plane unless we let them on our plane, essentially. So we would only have the ramp open. We'd leave it, like, basically up until we were bringing people on. But each time we'd get back and debrief at Moose Ops, we would essentially, like, give advice of things we did bad, things we did good, and then just give it to the next crew and then hope that they can learn from that. And they would let us know, like, what they did better. It was a lot of learning from each other and, like you said, game time decisions. But we did a couple orphan flights, which I think were some of the most, like, heartbreaking flights for me, where you would literally have parents handing their kids over the fence to be like, okay, like, we don't know if our family can get out, but we want our kid to get out of this country to have a better life. And so I remember loading up a bunch of kids, and that's so sad to me because they might never see their families again. But we had a captain, Adam McCord, who was our AC for one of those flights. And I love this because she brought a projector and a sheet. And so we played, like, Disney movies with subtitles on them and tried to, like, make it a little bit more enjoyable for them. So the moment we took off, like, we'd have them still on the floor and, like, they would watch these shows. And granted, I don't know if it helped at all, but I know how loud C-17s are and how scary that could be for someone who's never been on that, especially when you're not with your family. So anything we could do to be there for them, we did. I would say one of the hardest days was the Abbey Gate day when the Marines passed away. That was a big reminder of why we do what we do and why we're going to keep showing up. We were on the ground loading that day, and we were lucky enough to be able to work with all of them. One in particular, Nicole Gee, she would bring a lot of the women and children out to our jet during that week. And one of the most, like, hoorah people I could ever, like, meet. And in all the articles you read about her saying, like, she's a Marines Marine, like, she loved her job. And she was not scared to be there, which I think that a lot of people were just exhausted and ready to go. And she's like, no, like, I'm going to be here until, like, this is over. So that day, like, we were loading people up. We had heard about a suicide bomber. That had been an intel thing we had heard about the entire time, but it hadn't happened yet. I think we were all on our toes about that. And then we just see this, like, large thing of smoke and just this commotion. And a lot of the people we were around, like, were hopping on Humvees and any vehicle they had to get over to that gate to figure out what was going on. And we were told immediately, like, y'all need to leave, like, get off the ground, like, right now, because whatever that is, like, we're going to have to stop all operation right now. We were lucky to get off the ground that day, but I remember landing back in Qatar, and my phone just, like, blew up when I turned it back on, and my mom and, like, my friends were like, hey, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And because all they knew was, like, there had been service members that had died at HKIA. And no matter if it was Air Force, Marine, Army, et cetera, we're all a team. And so no matter who it is, like, you don't want it to have any U.S. service member name on there. And when the names came out that it was her and a couple others, like, we were all like, we're going to keep going. Because I think that was, like, the intent of the individuals that did all this, was, like, we want to keep them from coming back and taking these people out, or whatever the intent was, like, you think we're not going to come back? Okay, joke's on you, because we don't get scared that easily. Like, this is an even more reminder of why we're going to keep going back and doing what we're told to do. And so we just kept going back, but, like, seeing the Marines there in particular, how they had to keep doing, like, their job, them and the Army guys there, like, they didn't have time to break or have a mourning period through any of this, because we still had, like, 3 or 4 days left at that point. Seeing them rise to the occasion was the most inspirational thing I've ever seen, because those were 12 or 13 of their teammates, that there wasn't that many of them there, that they all knew these individuals. And they still protected the jets. They still protected the individuals they could. And then until, like, literally the last day, like, they were doing it the best they could. And so very honored to have been a part of this whole mission, but also seeing, like, how they handled it. So I think it was something that we could definitely, like, admire to be. So.
Yeah, that's really inspiring to hear that. This is just a crap sandwich from the get-go, and we could obviously, and I think we have on other podcasts, peel back the onion of this is probably not the best way to go about doing it, but nonetheless, this is the way it went down. How long of a flight was it on average between like Kabul and like with all the holding and stuff like that? Like what was the average time you're sitting on the plane from takeoff, getting there, coming back? What was the day?
Yeah, so a standard trip over there would be like 2.5 hours to get there. And then we would be on the ground until literally we had every single slot filled in our jet or unless something happened. And so you're on the ground for about 3.5, 4 hours, depending on how long you're waiting from there. So let's say that's already 8 hours. You're coming back another 3 hours because you're really heavy. And you're just trying to have the most comfortable flight as you can, but also get there fast. Most of the time we were in a holding pattern because there was no ramp space. A lot of people who haven't been to Qatar, like literally every single taxiway, every runway except for one essentially was having planes parked on it, which is not standard at all. And so that was something where they were constantly trying to get jets processed to take off essentially for us to land. And so a lot of flights were having to call in flight emergencies just because we had to land because the jets were so hot. Like in the summer, it is already upwards of 120, 130 degrees that our back of our plane cargo bay does not cool down past like 100. And then you have 500 people on your plane, which makes it exponentially hotter that you're having kids, elderly people passing out that you have to get on the ground. So we would be in a holding pattern maybe an hour and then get on the ground. And then we couldn't open our ramp until we had security forces around us, which, again, we didn't have that manpower for that. If this is something we're literally figuring out as we went on. And as the days went on, they were able to get more people. But the problem is it was only like a 14, 15-day operation. And it takes a couple of days to get people there. So you'd have to essentially like make decisions of like, okay, we have to start opening up doors because we have to get airflow throughout here. And at that point, you're sitting on the ground for an additional 6 to 9 hours because you have to have these other jets being processed. And so, and we'd have like 30-hour days easily. And then you'd get off the plane whenever that's done and then sleep 8 hours and go again. But it was one of those things where, yes, like crew rest is super important, but like these days extended because this isn't like a standard mission. We're like, okay, like our crew rest is time. We have to leave. It's like, no, you have these people on your jet that you have to make sure they're okay, they get processed, and then whenever they're good, you're good. And so I think that's what a lot of people struggled with was because we've never had, like, days like this. Like, we've had long days, but normally, like, you have your duty day period that you have to, like, abide by, where these are, okay, like, this is a completely different situation. So very, very long days. The flights were not terribly long, but it was more or less the period of sitting on the ground when you landed and then loading people that were just a lot longer than they normally would be. So
yeah, the environment is terrible. Then not to mention all the stress and strain and the emotions that are running through you.
Yeah.
The first day you mentioned, you think about maybe 500 people, what was the normal load that you're bringing out? Like passenger wise, I assume it's all floor loading again, because you're trying to max. Mm-hmm. So like to me, I guess the impressive part, and I've mentioned it with AP and some other ones, is like, takeoff and landing data, like, is such, you know, such a big deal. So seeing the first C-17s when the field was overrun, taking off, knowing that they're just making it happen, which is like against everything in the book, they're being champions, and it's like they made it happen. But as we all know, the Air Force is not always they don't look too kindly upon that. So I'm just thinking, again, when I first saw the C-17 that was overloaded, I mentioned with AP, I was surprised. I'm glad everyone got distinguished flying crosses and they weren't Q3'd, yeah, which is like the normal Air Force way of doing things. So they did the right thing. But what was the normal load coming out of there? Were you still having to kind of, I wouldn't say guesstimate, but like figuring out how much weight you got in the back of the plane? What was some of the, like those like technical processes that you were going through?
Yeah, so we can fit upwards of like 586,000 pounds. I need to double check that. It's been a minute. But
yeah,
can hold a lot of people or in a lot of weight. But the thing is, like, I think most of our missions were anywhere between like 400 to 500 people. And then the embassy individuals in the very beginning, it was probably only like 350 at that point because their trips were a little bit more comfortable. But as far as like a standard load, it would be like 500 to 600 people. And that's something you do worry about as a load master is like, okay, like how do I count?
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Calculate this because a lot of times we didn't have like a passenger manifest. It was essentially like, hey, like we're going to keep loading these people until like your jet's full and then you're going to go. And you're like, this is not how as a loadmaster I'm ever comfortable doing it because literally like you are in charge of the back of the plane. And if it is too heavy, like and that plane nose tail dives, like it is your fault. And so you do not want that on you. And so I think a lot of it was just trying to find the best CG as possible, trying to get as much headcount as you could. And then knowing that like the bags in the back typically like guesstimating everything, which again, you don't like doing because you want like actual numbers. And so that was definitely something with your team and crew, you'd have to talk through like, okay, how many people are we willing to take? And then how many people like, do you think this is? And so we try to like count throughout it and then do like an estimated weight for it. But most of the time, like we knew we'd be under that weight limit. So we'd be okay. It was just more of when we're bringing cargo, we'd want like actual numbers because that's when issues would arise. So.
Yeah, I guess probably for like men, women, and children, you got an average weight you probably associate with each gender and youth.
Yeah.
But if you're bringing out an MRAP or something like that, then
you definitely want the weight for it.
Yeah. Those are big things. I only bring that up now that I fly big old fat planes, like in the F-16, like you didn't, I mean, you would do told, right? But like you're going to be fine or the engine's going to quit and you're not going to be fine.
Sure.
You're going to get to ride the rocket seat, but being able to calculate it, getting the CG, all those things really do matter. My funny story in the 777, there was one, like someone does all the like weight and balance for you normally and get sent to you and you have to do like you have to run some calculations in the jet, but it's all computerized. Mm-hmm. But I landed in a place that we didn't have that and I was gonna have to do it, which we never do. And I was like, if you want to crash a 777, this is how you do it. You have me do the weight and balance in this thing because I have no idea how to do it. You just think of like the 747 coming out of Bagram.
Yep.
Like that CCTV footage is like horrific to see that. So it matters, and that's why I've talked about it a good bit for those who or listening, I've heard it a few times because to me, it's really impressive that all came down.
Yeah.
What were like some of the things, did you do anything different? You mentioned like, all right, hey, like the emergency doors, like tying those up or latching those so they couldn't be open. Cause like in my mind, all right, yeah, like you said, there are people who have never been in an airplane. They're scared to death. They're hot. They're miserable. I can very easily seeing like actually pulling an emergency handle or something that should not be pulled or done. Was there anything you were doing or everyone was doing differently or having to modify or being cognizant about that you wouldn't normally have to worry about?
Yeah. So immediately, like we would take the crash axes off the walls. So those weren't up there. We all had, you know, M9s on us. We had Ravens with us. The first night we didn't have Ravens, which was something we definitely learned very quickly on. Like, we need Ravens if we're going to go there. Because there had been a time restraint. Like, if you're on the ground less than this many hours, you don't have Ravens. And for those who don't know what Ravens are, it's flying security forces, essentially, where they guard all the engines and the doors. We chained down all the entrances except for the ramp. Just because we had one of the load masters, Alexis Sanchez, her crew, they had someone open the door on taxi. Say to pull a gun on someone, which is not something anyone should ever want to do, but like you got to protect your crew. A lot of this was just not standard because as you see, like people trying to jump on the plane on the taxiway, that happened to our crew, that happened to several other crews where people were literally holding on to any type of device outside of the plane, which to me is, I can never imagine that, like that you're that like desperate to leave a country that you're going to hold on to a moving plane. And so there are several instances where we landed or people would find like body parts on the plane. And definitely like so much shout out to the maintenance guys for everything they did, because there's a lot of things that they saw that I'm sure is not easy to unsee. But they kept doing their job despite all that. So I think it was constant game plan decisions because you're constantly trying to see like, how can I best protect this plane and protect the people in it? And so I think a lot of people were worried about getting Q3 and stuff like that, because we're not supposed to do like a lot of this stuff. But it's figuring out like how you can most effectively like protect everything on this jet and do it in the right way. And so very proud of each crew for every decision they made, just because like a lot of it was very different. And so we learned from each other as far as, you know, cargo straps, like how to do it right. We started doing tarps on the floor. Originally that wasn't something we did, but a lot easier cleanup for the maintenance guys, because before, like, I will never sleep on the floor of a C-17 again. Let me just say that. But there's stuff that probably be there forever. But tarps like definitely helped like clean that up. So all you could do is just rip the tarp off and then, you know, power wash it and then send it again. But we learned as we went. And I feel like that's the standard Air Force thing, is like you got to be flexible and just figure it out as you go. But yeah, definitely in different instances like that. So.
Yeah, I think that whole thing is the epitome of just making it happen, for a lack of a better phrase, but using judgment, exercising sound judgment in making decisions with the information you have available. And I think that's one thing that our Air Force does well, is trying, when it comes down to it, the decentralized command, or centralized command, decentralized execution there is like is a big part of it, and enabling flight leads, enabling aircraft commanders to make decisions, because that's where the information is. So you want those people making those decisions.
Yeah, that's one thing I tell a lot of people, is it's easy when you're going through training to just like skim through the CBTs or skim through certain trainings you have to do. But sometimes that's the only time you ever get to do that training, because a lot of this is the first time I ever saw it was on deployment. And so like, be ready so you don't have to get ready kind of mentality, because ultimately like we are in the Air Force, and being in the C-17, you're lucky enough you get to travel the world and see some beautiful places, and that's amazing. But there is this other side of it where it's stuff like this, where you're not going to always be 100% trained and ready to do it, but you'll have the training to be able to do it. But it's a lot of game time decisions, making the right decision, whether you think it's good or not, but like just trying to use the training you have and just make that decision with your crew and be like, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to stick with it. We're going to execute it. And that's it. And if you're struggling with something, like, you talk to each other. Don't ever play I have a secret, because a lot of this in Afghanistan was like, if you saw something that you didn't think was right, like, you have to immediately tell your crew and you'd like decide together, because if you didn't talk about it, something else could have definitely negatively occurred. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
not to make light of it, but I mean, I never skim through my CBTs. I'm full up on cyber awareness training. Yeah.
That's great.
Questions about hackers, etc. That's my wheelhouse.
There you go.
So kind of encompassing that month, and then I want to pivot here, but your overall thoughts, like, is it emotional time, move past it? What are some of the thoughts that run through your mind when, you know, you hear August 21st, 2021 in Kabul? What do you think?
It was probably one of the hardest months I've had to do thus far. There are so many people that were a part of this. I think every single C-17 loadmaster or pilot was out there at some point. Very honored to be a part of this community, whether they're honored in a way or not, like, they deserve to be recognized, just because a lot of people have made a lot of hard decisions, and that's something that they're going to have to, like, you know, deal with and focus with. But, it was not the best thing ever operation wise, but that's something that if you're going to wait for like the perfect operation, that's never going to happen. So you make the best with what you have. I think the fact that we lost 13 is the hardest part of all of this. Was we were so close to the end, and that happened, and that shouldn't have happened. So it's a big reminder to us of why we do what we do, and to keep doing it for them and for those who can't continue to do this. I hope we never have to lose people like that, but that's part of the military, and it sucks. But you keep rising for the occasion for them. So this month is hard, but it's a reminder that we can do hard things, and if you think you can't, you can. So it's just shifting that mentality of like, okay, like, we can do anything as a team if we actually like come together and do it, because, you know, my crew, like, we didn't even know each other going into it. I think every crew can attest to that. But we all like come together with your team and you get it done. So, trust each other and rely on each other, because they're always going to have your back. So
I like it. Yeah. One last C-17 question, 'cause I should ask in the beginning. You mentioned you were senior airman at the time.
Yep.
How far out of MQT or the schoolhouse were you? Like, how long had you been in the squadron before you deployed?
Yeah, so I got to Charleston June 3rd of 2020. So it was about a year and 2 months.
All right, so not quite ripping the Band-Aid off, but that was
not quite.
But pretty full up for just being there for a year. All right, I want to pivot a little bit because I think it's a pretty cool part of the story here. You're now waiting to go to pilot training. You're at NJEP, so Euronato Joint Jet Pilot Training out in beautiful
Wichita Falls. Yes. Yeah. Ooh.
It's hot. Like the mosquitoes are the size of hummingbirds there.
Yeah.
But what was the process? Like, did you know you wanted to be a pilot, or is that something that, hey, after you got in the Air Force, you wanted to do it? Talk me through like when you said, hey, I want to go do that. And then what was the process like to get to where you're sitting today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have kind of a different story than some might, but I hope that it can be an attest that you can do a lot of things. But I actually graduated high school in 2013, was accepted into the Air Force Academy. I'm very honored, very excited to do that. Life happened, to put it short. I was in Boston in 2013 when the bombing happened as a pacer, and one of the people I was running with unfortunately passed away that day. And then 2 months later, one of my close family members committed suicide. So I went into basic at the academy, not in the best headspace, to be quite honest with you. Very close to my family, and made a decision to leave. And that's something I had to live with. I finished basic, started the school year, and like a dream that I wanted to do my whole life essentially just like ended. So from there, I went to college. I went to Furman University and Adams State University. The desire to serve never went away. It's something I wanted to do my entire life. It took me like 6 years to graduate college from transferring schools, but I finally did. And then applied to OTS, didn't get accepted. I have a graphic design degree, for those who are wondering. Not the most competitive Air Force degree. So
I did international affairs, so I'm not like very competitive either. But yeah, here I am.
Right. Here we are. Decided to enlist in the Air Force. A lot of people were like, why would you do that? You have a degree. Best decision of my entire life. I will stand by that forever. I've always wanted to be a pilot, but for me, I wanted to serve. I didn't care what it was. I'm very thankful that I got to be a loadmaster because aviation has my heart, and I love that mission. But I went in enlisted knowing that I wanted to commission, but I wasn't going to get that in the way of my job. And if I didn't commission, I was going to at least try a billion times. And if I didn't get it, hopefully, you know, do 20 years. But I essentially graduated from tech school, went to Charleston. You have a meeting with your commander, typically, I think, at most bases when you start, when you get to your squadron. And he asked me, like, hey, like, what are some goals that you have? And, you know, obviously was I want to be the best load that I can be for the squadron, but also, like, I would love to commission one day as well. I don't want that to get in the way of this job, though. And so from there, like, I had some really, really awesome senior NCOs that were like, hey, if you want to commission, like, we're going to tell you X, Y, and Z of stuff you should do, but like obviously you have to do it at this point. Like we can tell you all day, but if you don't do it, it doesn't matter. So one thing I'll tell a lot of enlisted members, airmen especially, is if you're on a commission, it's gonna take a lot of work. But it is not impossible. The biggest thing is like putting yourself in positions to where like you can show leadership, but also like if you enjoy something, like share that with others. So like one thing that faith is really important to me. So I did a lot of stuff like at the chapel with airmen. Like they have something called the Junior Enlisted Council that you can be a part of while you live in the dorms. There's dorm council. There's so many things that you can do. But it's just putting yourself like in extra things outside of work. Like you don't want to just do it just to do it. But like if there's things that you're passionate about, like obviously that's going to show if you do it. But I applied to a program called SLEC-O. Is Senior Leader Enlisted Commissioning Program. It's like O is essentially as you have your degree, they'll send you to OTS and you'll commission from that point. It's like A is if you only have your associates, they'll send you to ROTC for 2 years and you'll commission that way. So it's a difficult program to get into, but it is not impossible. There's so many commissioning sources out there I feel like people just don't know about. So it's important to do your research and talk to people about that. But I was in Air Mobility Command, so essentially, like, you go through your squadron, your group, your wing, your numbered Air Force, and then your MAGCOM. So from there, they pick one person from your MAGCOM for SLEC-O and one person for SLEC-A. And then from there, you go to OTS. So that's the program that I went through. I was really lucky to, you know, have some great commanders and leadership that helped me out. But, like, It's not impossible. Just find the program that you're interested in and go for it.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Some things are just better together, like party playlists and Friday nights, campfires and ghost stories, peanut butter and chocolate. And Reese's Cups are the perfect combination of creamy peanut butter and delicious milk chocolate. So, when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Buy Reese's today wherever candy is sold.
So,
well, obviously a great attitude, great drive. I think a lot of really good advice there of finding something you're passionate in, because being well-rounded. But the piece I think is really important was saying, hey, you want to do this, but you want to be the best loadmaster first, which I think is important advice. No matter where you want to go, whatever your job is, be the best at that job first and foremost. The rest will come, but having those goals is important.
Exactly.
I was going to ask you what was the selection rate there, but I mean, air mobility, I don't know. Well, that's probably like 80,000. I don't know how many airmen are in air mobility command, but that's a lot of airmen in air mobility command to have two people selected. Do you know like how many people applied? Probably don't know that number. I mean, I'm just thinking of the bases that like you have Charleston, Lewis McCord, Wright Patt.
Yeah, Dover, McGuire, and Travis.
Travis. A lot of bases, so that's really awesome. I think a true testament, obviously, of your character and your ability there, so that's pretty cool. Congrats on that.
Thank you. It's a great program, but the thing is with OTS is that I was a senior airman and I got picked up. And I think a lot of times that people are like, oh, you can't get picked up as an airman, you can't get picked up as staff, you have to be more of like a higher NCO. And I think that it is amazing having like more leadership and more airmen under you, like the higher you get, because then when you get OTS, like you've led more people. But it is not impossible to do it at a younger rank. I think my biggest thing was no matter what rank I was, I want to serve in the best capacity that I can. Like I'm not going to change based off of like my rank. Like obviously like you're going to be more mature and like the people that you have, but, like you can make a difference wherever you are. I will tell a lot of people too, where my degree wasn't very competitive. And so like make them tell you no. The biggest feedback I had was, hey, your degree isn't good enough. And so, you know, we're lucky enough to have great TA through the Air Force. Like I went and got my master's in aeronautics. So I think that really helped. But for those who don't have their degree yet, like do your research on what the Air Force needs and get that, because then you won't waste as much time as I did. But like there's definitely ways to do it. If they tell you that you're deficient in an area, well, go be efficient in that area. Don't let that discourage you. Like let that fuel you to just drive you more and go do those things so you can show back up. They see your name again and they're like, okay, this person really wants it. So if you don't get in the first or second time, even the third time, I have friends who've gotten accepted like their fifth or sixth try. So don't give up. Just keep applying yourself, keep being the best like airman you can be, and then or NCO, and then you're going to get there eventually. It just takes time depending on the program. So.
Yeah. So I've heard a theme with you. It sounds like there's a lot of dedication, not giving up and pushing through. You willing to talk about the bombing a little bit? I didn't know that aspect. And the reason I want to talk about it, or the thread I want to pull on there, is I know you're off literally to the races here next week. So passionate runner. And are you doing a triathlon? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm doing an Ironman in Finland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, well, half Ironman. Not like a full.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, half. So doesn't really count.
It doesn't really count.
But so here's the thread I want to pull on. Like you're a pacer during the Boston Marathon. I did not know this till you mentioned it. But obviously you're running with someone, they get killed. That's a really traumatic event as an understatement of the day, to say the least.
Yeah.
But it didn't deter you from like, I guess, still pursuing this. Like I can see that being an event that could lead someone to just saying, this is not for me, or I can't do it. Did you ever any like thoughts of like quitting, or hey, I can't do this? Was it tough to get back out there? Talk to me about that.
Are you referring more to deployment side of it?
Not even the deployment side of it. I mean, that could be an aspect of it, but I mean, even I would think going through such a traumatic event that now the next time you go run, or you go to a large, like if you go run in a marathon or Ironman or whatever it might be. Like obviously you experienced that.
Yeah.
So being able to get out and go do it again without fear or pushing through that takes perseverance in my mind.
Yeah.
Is that something that crosses your mind, or you just,
it is. So, one thing that was kind of crazy was I qualified for the Boston Marathon last year. So I did it this past April, which was the 10-year anniversary of the bombing, which I didn't even realize until I got there. I was like, oh, well, that's been 10 years already. But they had a memorial with, like, the lights on it where the individuals who had died passed away. I will say there was a minute there, like, after 2013 where when I left the academy and life, like, did not go well for about 7 years. A lot of it just crashed and burned in different areas. But my biggest thing was you can let events like that completely destroy you. And I think I did let it kind of affect me for a really long time because I was only 17. But there comes a point where you have to make a decision of, like, am I going to let this just destroy me the rest of my life? Or, like, am I going to let this fuel me to be something better? Because looking back on it, it's a big reason why I continued to want to be in the military is that people want to keep you from doing things that you love or live in fear. And I refuse to live that way. So I think I did live like that for a little bit. Big reason why, like, on deployment when that happened again, where it is absolutely terrifying because you never know when stuff like that can happen. But it is in that moment of, like, okay, like, be there for the people you're with and, like, relentlessly support them through this stuff because it's hard. Like, no one should ever have to go through any of this. But that's a big part of, like, just being, like, a good friend, a good teammate to people. I really struggled for a while after Boston. I struggled with leaving the academy. A lot of that led into that. But there got a point in my life where I'm like, okay, I can't live like this anymore. Like, I want to do something and I want to try to, like, help people with that because people go through hard stuff all the time. And if you don't go through hard stuff, you're just lying because everyone does. And so it's important to be, like, vulnerable, but also be important to be like, okay, like, hey, we can do hard things. We can get through hard things and use that to, like, make you better in the long run. It's just hard to have that mentality in the moment because you're like, I don't want to hear that. That sucks because I want to, like, wallow in this. But it would be hard to say life will never have its, like, tribulations, but it's learning how to deal with that and then move forward in, like, a healthy way. So,
okay, tough question. So how do you deal with that? Was there something that you mentioned faith earlier? Was it something that just over time you just made this decision like, hey, I'm going to get over it and I'm going to, you know, live life and be positive. It's a paraphrasing there. Yeah. Or was there like a catalyst where you said like, there's an aha moment that something made you pivot that mindset?
Yeah. One thing I'll say, faith always has been super important to me. It's gotten me through some hard stuff. Just cause it is a reminder that you're not going through it alone. But I will say I haven't always had like a positive mindset. I was very negative for a long time. Of, like, everything bad is happening, like, life is terrible, like, I just don't know how I'm going to get out of this. But I think it's finding, like, what your why is so important. I know people say it all the time, and it can be kind of cliche, but it's, like, I think it is very important. Because when things are hard, it's a reminder of, like, okay, why you get out of bed in the morning and why you do what you do. Whether it was losing that friend in Boston and losing my family member due to, like, you know, mental health stuff. And even with, you know, Kabul back in 2021, it's a reminder to keep going because there's a lot of people that can't do that anymore. But we have the ability to wake up every day. We get to go to work. We get to complain about things. Like, we get to go for a run. I think my big stress reliever is running. I love going for a run or going to the gym because it's a good way just to clear my head. But I think everyone has a different way of dealing with stress. And so I think finding healthy ways to cope with that is the best thing. But just trying to, like, remember why you're doing it is such a huge thing. Because if you don't have a concrete why, it doesn't really pull you out of hard stuff. So.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That was a little pivot I didn't anticipate going down, but I appreciate you being open about that.
Absolutely.
I want to jump back to, what are you doing now? Did you know when you got picked up for OTS that you were going to be a pilot or go to pilot training?
No. So I actually made a mistake, which my leadership laughs at me about this. But when I found out that I got picked up, I was on a Zoom call with General Minahan with my leadership, and he was like, congratulations, like, you're gonna go to OTS, sorry you can't be a loadmaster anymore. And typically they don't tell you your job right there, like, they send you it later. And I was like, oh, sir, like, what's my job gonna be? And my leadership just, like, looked at me and were like, why would you ask that?
Why not? It's my life.
But a couple of days later, I got back from our local and I checked my email and they're like, congratulations, you're tentatively going to pilot training. And I, like, freaked out and, like, ran into our scheduling office and was like, guys, guess what? And I'm sure they were not as excited as I was, but I was like, my thought for the world. But I left for OTS in April, and so I was supposed to go to Laughlin Air Force Base for pilot training, and you know, super excited about Del Rio, you know, but
yeah, Laughlin by the Sea.
By the Sea. But about halfway through OTS, they asked like any rated pilots that were interested in applying to NJET, you could go in front of a board and submit like a package that way. And I honestly didn't even think that was a possibility, just because I knew it was a lot of USAFA cadets or ROTC guys that would go. So I didn't know it was a OTS possibility. So I submitted a package for that. I went in front of a board and was very, very lucky and honored that I got to get picked up with another OTS guy. And so it was kind of a game time change, because I was had all my stuff going to Laughlin, and then we just swapped it to go to Shepherd. But I'm very, very honored to get to be in training with NATO instructors and NATO students, and definitely a very cool curriculum to be a part of. So I start in November, so it's kind of coming up already, but definitely very thankful to be here. So
it's a good time to be having dollar rides. It's like November and December, and
be a lot cooler.
Texas. Yeah, like, oh gosh, I just like have flashbacks to sit in the back seat just waiting for someone to go through a checklist.
Yeah.
In July. What do you want to fly? That's the million-dollar question.
Now that I have a choice, so if I did, my dream plan would be an F-16 or an A-10.
Okay. Yep. They win. Okay. Well, you do get a choice, but then like the Air Force gets a choice.
The Air Force gets a choice too.
Yeah. You get a vote. It's just a small vote, but hopefully, you know, an F-16. I don't know about the A-10.
They're going to be around for a little bit longer. You know, fingers crossed.
I want to shoot the gun once.
Same. My life would be made if I can just shoot it one time. Yeah. Like, okay, we're good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. Well, I appreciate you joining me on the podcast. Thanks for sharing your story. Again, it's incredible to hear just what all the men and women did, you know, especially the month of August. And that's where I'm really focusing on here. Because again, I think we all saw the chaos that was going on, and I can't imagine what that was like on the ground. So thanks for sharing your story. Best of luck in the future. I know you're going to hang around for a There I Was story, and look forward to you flying the Viper one day.
See
you. The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns, Gear, and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit GunsGarin.com/rain.
Good news, bad news. All those spam and text calls you've been getting lately, well, that's a result of your information having been sold by third-party data brokerages, or it's been stolen and sold to nefarious people. Ticketmaster recently had a data breach where 560 million users' information was stolen and sold in the dark web. This included their names, physical addresses, email addresses, credit card information, and much more. Best case scenario, this just ends with more annoying phone calls and text messages. Worst case, it's going to end in fraud, and you're really going to be in the hurt locker. That's why I've been using a service called Aurora for over a year now. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but not only do they monitor the dark web and the internet for my information in case it is involved in a breach, they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. When I signed up, they identified over 60 that had my information and went right to work removing me from these data brokerages. Now, yep, you could do this yourself, but each one of these data brokerages has its own policies and procedures, and I have no idea how you would even start trying to remove yourself from these services, let alone how much time that would take. But Aurora does that, as well as they offer a whole suite of tools to keep you safe, including a VPN, antivirus, password management, parental controls, and identity theft insurance. You get this all in one app, one place, so it's super simple. And you can do this with a 14-day risk-free trial. Super simple. And if you don't like it, you just cancel anytime. It's not complicated. At a minimum, you can take a look and see what information of yours is out there lurking on the web right now. Use the link down below in the description or go to aurora.com/afterburn and you get 14 days risk-free, cancel anytime, super easy, and take the first step in protecting yourself out there on the interwebs. That's the good news, by the way.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.